Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell here with Chris Shore with a review of the WWE Raw show that took place on August 8th, 2011 in San Jose, California. Before I bring Chris in, just want to sneak in a couple of quick plugs for you guys. Of course, coming up on Sunday, both Chris and I will have live coverage of the WWE SummerSlam pay-per-view that will be available to everyone on both the ad-based version of ProWrestling.net and the member section. Of course, the member site is ad-free, and Chris and I will be teaming up for another audio show. We'll be reviewing SummerSlam in great detail later that night. That will be member exclusive. And I also want to remind you guys, if you haven't checked it out already on the member site, there is a 61-minute audio interview that I conducted with WWE Tough Enough contestant Jeremiah Riggs. He's had some controversial things to say about his experience the week he spent down in Florida Championship Wrestling. And so he was nice enough to stop by and kind of explain where he was coming from on those things. And tons of audio interviews available over there right now. Former WWE creative team member Court Bauer, former TNA creative team member Dutch Mantel, both of those guys have stopped by a couple of different times to just discuss their time in wrestling, current wrestling stuff, and also Chris Jericho, Conan. The list goes on and on. X-Pac joined me one time. It was a simulcast with PWTorch.com editor Wade Keller, and we actually, all three of us, got together and reviewed a Raw show. Dawn Marie, Brock Lesnar, Sinister Minister Jim Mitchell, and the list goes on and on. So if you're into audio, and obviously you are if you're listening to this, we've got you covered on the .NET member site. Chris and I both do Q&A audios each and every, well, almost every week. I can't say that I do one each and every week, but I try. And reviews of all the major television shows, whether it's Chris and I or Will Pruitt, Jake Barnett, those two team up for the .NET countdown show. So there's hours of new audio each and every week. And again, it's the ad-free version of the site. If you're listening on iTunes wondering, how do I take advantage of this? Head on over to ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up area. It's right there on the right side of your screen. And for as little as $5.50 a month, if you take the annual option, you can have access to all those perks, including the .NET members forum, the ability to write your own blog, and much more. And if you just want to try it out for a month and see if you like it, no strings attached, $7.50 will get you a one-month sign-up. And it's a great time with WWE SummerSlam coming up. And I'm not going to drop the name because every time I do, it seems like something falls through. But I do have another interview coming up with a former WWE performer scheduled for Friday. No promises, because, like I say, those things, every once in a while they fall through. But it looks like that is going to happen on Friday. So great time to sign up with SummerSlam on Sunday. And fun time in wrestling right now with all this CM Punk stuff going on. So now, having said all that, it's time to bring in Chris and get his thoughts. I'm going to start with you, Chris. Your thoughts on that final segment. Well, we're going to work our way through the show eventually. But just some quick thoughts on the final segment, the one that I think everyone's going to be talking about, with CM Punk, John Cena, Triple H, and my hero, not really, John Laurinaitis, out there for that contract signing at the end of the show.
Johnny Ace is getting more face time than he ever has in his career, isn't he?
Yeah, no kidding.
Certainly in the last segment of a show. You know, I really enjoyed that last segment. I was really kind of just blown away by what they gave us. It was very real feeling. It was very topical. You know, CM Punk talking about the releases that happened on Friday and using people's real names in those releases and, you know, calling Cena fake and a phony. And I thought that Cena, you know, carried his own very well in this part. He played the part that he needed to play. You know, he got a little silly at the end, and I thought the very, very, very end of the show was kind of anticlimactic after what we had built up to with that big verbal exchange. I thought what we got at the end was a little bit weak with Punk outside the ring. But, you know, it's kind of picking at nits at that point. I thought they did the best things they could possibly do to sell this match. We already know what they can do. We just saw it at the last pay-per-view. So there's no reason to kind of to go back to those things. Those things are set, and we can know what we're going to expect from them there. So they needed a different angle to come at it with us, and I thought, you know, Punk did a great job of continuing the pipe bomb analogy of him with the microphone. Cena held his own. Triple H mostly stayed out of the way. You know, and I thought it leaves a little bit of question of what's going to happen on Sunday. We know that Hunter is now the new special guest referee, and it could go either way with who he screws there, but you just kind of know something's going to happen, or at least feel like something's going to happen. I thought they did the best job they could selling that pay-per-view, and I thought it was very effective. Or maybe not just the pay-per-view, but certainly that match, the pay-per-view.
Did it go? Do you think it went over the heads of some casual viewers at any point?
I guess it all depends on what the definition of casual is. If you're talking about someone who doesn't do anything but watch on Monday nights, I'm sure there were some segments, the releases, maybe they didn't know what was going on there, and maybe if all they watch is Raw, they don't know who Kozlov is and who David Hart Smith is. So that might have gone over their heads a little bit. Other than that, no. I think that even though there was a lot of insider stuff, and kudos to Cena for mocking us for mocking him with the five moves of doom and that sort of thing. Even though if the person didn't get it as fully as, say, you or I did, in the context of how it was done, I think anybody could have picked it up. And maybe just the releases on Friday went over the top of the casual fan pit.
Yeah, and that's something they can figure out because, I was kind of trying to enjoy the segment, but at the same time put myself in the place of a casual viewer. And, I think you really have to be new to Raw to not know who Kozlov is. David Hart Smith, maybe you're going, I kind of remember. Was he in that Hart group? But, yeah, it was, that didn't, if you missed out on that, chances are you're not enough of a WWE fan to order SummerSlam anyway. You're a real casual viewer, and you're not ordering the show. So I didn't feel like they did. I mean, it was kind of, snarky, bitchy at times, and I think one criticism of it will be that they're tearing each other down so much, because I know that that's been a popular criticism of Rock and Cena thus far, is that in wrestling, generally, you build up the other guy. You tear him down seemingly, but at the same time, you're making it seem like you've got a hell of a challenge in front of you. You're building this guy up. You don't like him, and you get to all the reasons you don't like him, but you still establish that this guy's a hell of a wrestler, and I've got my work cut out for me. And they're not really doing that so much. They've said it at different times, especially Punk has been complimentary of Cena despite all the bashing he's done of him. But at some point, especially with Rock Cena, my comeback to that, to the criticism, is that I think these guys are at a high enough level that I think, that especially those two, their careers speak for themselves. I don't think... Is it hurting John Cena to have Rock tear him down? Well, maybe as far as his popularity goes, but are they going to turn him heel? I don't know. I mean, that's the one, as far as are people looking at John Cena differently now because Rock is torn into him so much and Cena's torn into, or Punk is torn into him so much? Maybe, but I don't think it's, I got to turn the channel. I think it's, they're starting to pay attention to what these guys are saying about him, and I really do wonder if we're setting, getting to the point where they are trying to, whether it's for Sunday or at Mania, if we're on the verge of getting that long-awaited John Cena heel turn. You mentioned Triple H. He is the special referee for the match. I've got a poll going right now on the website, and it's pretty split. I asked if, his addition to that match as referee enhanced people's interest in the SummerSlam main event. We're still very early in the voting because it just went up, I think, within the last hour. But 38% say yes, it creates some interesting scenarios and adds more star power. 36%, just 2% fewer, say no, they were more excited about the match before the addition of Hunter. And 26% say it really hasn't changed anything. So what's your take on this? Do you like the addition, or is this were they better off without Hunter?
I'm okay with Hunter being in this match. I mean, I'm of two minds of this. One is that, I don't want Hunter involved with this match because Punk and Cena is enough. It's been enough for a month. It's more than enough now. We don't need him there. But I also understand that he's got some sort of role in all this. He's got, he's part of the main storyline now, and if he's not dealing with this, then what is he dealing with? I really don't want to see a heel turn from him. I don't want to see him necessarily screw anybody, and that person aligns with him, and now that's the corporate thing, because it's so, tired and played out. And it would just be nice to have him go out there and just be impartial for a little bit. Because, I think we expect something at this point, and we've been conditioned to that because that's what we always get. And if, the way you make those things special again is we have a good long run where nothing ever happens, and we start bitching and going, oh, God, well, they put somebody in there, but they never do anything. They never pull the trigger. So then when they pull the trigger and there is some sort of swerve, it means something. So, you know, I kind of hope that we'll get that out of it. I'm not ready for Hunter to really interject into this feud. I realize he's in the thick of it, but he's not a competitor. He's not pulling the strings. He's, you know, we can question whether there should have been a tournament and all that stuff to begin with, but once you're dealt those cards, okay, he's done the rational thing and made a unification match, and, you know, he's going to make sure that it's legit and up, so he's going to put himself in it. So I'm okay with him being in there, and if he stays clean the whole way through, then I will be fine with him being in there. But I have to say, if we get some sort of swerve there, I don't really care what the swerve is. I don't care if he turns on Cena. I don't care if he turns on Punk. If he just does anything, I'm not going to be happy about it. I just don't see a scenario playing out where I'll go, okay, that was cool, because I just don't want to see it.
You know what? I'm willing to bet, and I could certainly be wrong, that if it leads to Cena turning heel, you're going to be pretty happy on Sunday night. I think people are going to be pretty excited. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's true. I was going to say, yeah, that's probably true. I mean, if that's ultimately what they're pulling the trigger for, then fine. But even then, it depends on how it plays out. You know, the idea of even Cena turning heel to align with Hunter and those who run the show just makes me go bleh. I'll be happy to see Cena's fresh as a heel, but the overall arc just makes me go bleh.
Yeah, it's like they wanted us to think that they're doing something. You know, there's going to be, with Hunter saying that it's, you know, one of those shows that's going to change the landscape of wrestling early on in the show, it's like, oh, all right. And then he's named the special referee, names himself the special referee of the match. I think they want us guessing, okay, what's the big screw job? Which side is he going to be on? And it could be the classic swerve of a swerve where he does just call it down the middle. And I'd be okay with that. I mean, I'm not going into the show thinking this has to be when they turn John Cena. In fact, at the end of the show, when Cena and Hunter are in the ring together, and Punk, without a mic in hand, is looking at them, up at them, going, oh, it's a company party, is the fix in. With Punk saying, it almost makes you think, oh, yeah, so that's not going to happen. If Hunter is going to align with anyone, it's probably going to be Punk, but I don't know. I'd love to know if it turns out that he's just there and he calls it right down the middle, did they add him to this because they were worried that, you know, this match needed a little more star power? Looking at the ads for the show, normally if they've got something laid out like this, you're going to see it in the advertisements. And so I wonder if this was a late minute addition, you know, just kind of a within the last week they've decided, all right, you know what, let's add Hunter to it. Any thoughts on that? What's your guess as far as why they've added him? Do you think it is an angle, or do you think it's for star power?
Well, former WWE creative member Seth Mates certainly seems to think on Twitter that Hunter is trying to crush Punk in some way possible. He was very vocal tonight about that, and that, you know, Hunter was basically going to sabotage the story, and then when it did bad buys or the fallout from it was bad or whatever, he would blame it on Punk. I don't think there's anything quite that sinister going on here. I think that they've got Hunter in this new position. They're really trying to get him over in that new position, and so they're just putting him anywhere they can at this point. It definitely could have been a late minute addition, but I just don't think it was necessarily because they felt like it was more star power was needed. I think they're just trying to do something and really establish him as that new character. Vince McMahon might be gone, but the Vince McMahon character is not. It lives on in the form of Triple H, and I think they want to establish that to some degree.
Yeah, it almost feels too soon for Hunter to really, you know, I could see him not inadvertently deciding the match, where, you know, it's just something he does that accidentally, you know, he misses something or, you know, but it just feels too soon for, like, Hunter to turn heel, just blatantly side with one guy, unless he's really provoked into doing so. So I kind of hope it's the sort, you know, they're setting us up, hey, what's going to, you know, is this, what screw job finish are they doing? And it doesn't play out that way, I guess, is my hope. But, you know, like I said about you, if it turns out that they've got this really elaborate way to turn John Cena heel, I'm not going to be complaining on Sunday night, I don't think, because as much as I understand why he is still a babyface and, you know, with the merchandise sales and whatnot, it's going to be a really fun time whenever he does finally go the heel route. And It surprised me a little bit. I'm curious to get your thoughts. Were you, did it, were you a little bit taken aback when they had Punk work Del Rio? I know they worked a house show over the weekend and everything, but it just seemed like it was really them. It was almost like they're saying, yeah, this guy is an all-out babyface for right now anyway. Yeah, we've had heel versus heel matches, but, I mean, Punk plays to the crowd when he makes his entrance now. He goes to both sides of the stage, and he's selling some major merchandise. You know, they're selling out of his T-shirts. So, I mean, do you think that they really are going to go face with this guy long-term, or is this just kind of a, well, let's strike while it's hot, and, you know, we'll position him as a face, and then, you know, if he's a dick on Sunday and turns heel, then maybe people won't see it coming as easily.
I mean, I think he's the second coming of Steve Austin, at least in that type of role. I think that's his whole shtick right now. And I think a lot of why he wore the Austin T-shirt, you know, he talks about it just being kind of one of those things, but I don't believe that for a minute. CM Punk's not that guy that just leaves things to chance. I think that he, you know, he's now the anti-hero. He's the guy who comes out there, and because, you know, you take Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and move him 10 years earlier in time, and he's a bad guy. He's a heel. Nobody cheers that. And that's kind of where we are with Punk right now, is that we've got a guy who has heel tendencies but plays it up to the crowd and gets cheered. And it's not even that tweener role like Randy Orton has. It's more of a deliberate thing. It's what Ken Anderson and TNA aspires to be. I'm the asshole that is cheered. And that's what I think is going on with Punk right now. So, yes, I guess that makes him a babyface insofar as Steve Austin was a babyface.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't like my view of Punk changed in any major way with him working against Del Rio. And it just, I don't know, it was a little bit odd to me. Did it surprise you at all? I know Will Pruitt, .NET staffer Will Pruitt, put on Twitter earlier today that if they put Punk in the ring tonight, they're making a big mistake. Did you feel that way before, and do you feel that way now after the show?
Well, I had a problem with him working Del Rio for a couple of different reasons. You know, with Cena working Swagger and then Punk working Del Rio, it seemed to be, you know, usually the baby face of a feud when they're both booked in the same night to face somebody before the pay-per-view. Usually the baby face is the one that's got the tougher road, and I don't think there'd be any argument that Del Rio was the tougher road than Jack Swagger is. So, I mean, you're kind of leaning towards the babyface tendency there with Punk. And then also, I just didn't like the idea of using Del Rio there. As we talked, as one of the members said in the forum, you know, by right, he could main event every pay-per-view from now on Mania, because he's won like 3 number one contenders matches plus Money in the Bank. You know, I don't understand what happened with him. I'm really confused from where, you know, back in April, I would have bet the house he was going to leave WrestleMania the World Heavyweight Champion. Now I'd be surprised if he made it through cuts again this weekend. So I had problems with it for other reasons, but I don't know that him working was a mistake. I understand Will's point, and I guess it all depends on what happens Sunday. You know, I think if Cena turns heel, and so you wanted the moment to kind of to pre-establish that Punk was going to end up being the babyface there, then okay, I understand why you're doing it. It makes perfect sense to me. But if that's not going to be the case, then I can understand why Will would want to keep him out. I think it's okay now, and it all depends on what happens Sunday.
All right, well, let's get into the show. And, you know, we'll certainly get back to Cena and Punk and Triple H and all that as we work our way through. Somebody pointed out last week, rightfully so, that Chris Jericho has been added to the opening video that they play before every show, not just Raw, but that clip of, you know, past performers, past and present performers that they always play. I can't even think of the name of it because it's late and it's been a long day. But he is back in there briefly. Michael Cole welcomed us to the show, which I don't like. I'll just say right off the top, I know it seems like a little thing. Jim Ross should be the host of that show. Jim Ross is the babyface. Michael Cole is the heel. I don't want the heel welcoming me to the show. I want Jim Ross to be the play-by-play guy, and I want Michael Cole to settle in as a heel color commentator. I think he could be just fine in that role. But we get, immediately after that, we get Hunter. His music played, and he came out wearing the suit and all that good stuff, and talked about how SummerSlam is going to be one of those shows that changes the landscape of WWE, and he focused on the main event, of course, and talked about the official contract signing. And then he said both men would compete on the show, and he said Cena's match would take place now. And Cena came out, and he and Hunter exchanged words off mic. I don't know what happened, but they had to replay this because you couldn't really make out what they were saying very well. And even the second time around, it was a little, you know, still kind of tough. So I don't know if it was poorly mic'd or just poorly planned or what happened there. But Hunter essentially justified his role in the main event or as the referee while Cena was implying that it was an ego thing for Hunter. So, you know, for anyone who thinks that Triple H doesn't understand his reputation and isn't willing to play into that egomaniacal side that, you know, the egomaniacal persona that he has online, some of it justified, some of it with people just jumping to ridiculous conclusions at times too, you know, you're wrong. I mean, he certainly is, you know, WWE is aware of it, and you wouldn't have lines like that coming from Cena if he wasn't okay with it. But we went to our first match. We got an early commercial break, by the way, after Cena made his entrance. And then our first match was Cena beating Swagger in 5 minutes and 25 seconds. The match itself, I just couldn't get into. I'm like, well, Swagger's not going to beat Cena going into SummerSlam. Even though, Punk and Del Rio, maybe just because I think we're all kind of like guardedly optimistic that they're really going to go all the way with Punk, that when he does wrestle, even if it's an obvious winning scenario for him, he still's like, you never know, they could do a cheap DQ finish here. Cena, I just didn't feel that way. Did the match do anything for you?
No, I mean, when it came out, it's, you know, okay, Cena's going to face the guy who can't beat Evan Bourne. Why should we even care at this point? It's a shame. Jack Swagger was the World Heavyweight Champion not too terribly long ago, but... You know, now he's been kind of reduced to this. The match didn't do anything for me. I thought they did as good as they could to not bury Swagger in the match. He didn't look awful coming out of it, but it was filler. It really was.
And you know what? And good match placement. If you're going to do that match, get it out of the way early,
yeah,
because I think everyone just knows Aaron Cena's going over here. Even if you're just a real casual fan, you got to be like, yeah, he's not losing here. But Cena won with the attitude adjustment. I thought the announcers were really good up until this point, because Cole was taking a logical heel point of view regarding Hunter and his role as the referee, siding with, of all people, Cena, in questioning whether it was, you know, Triple H's ego was causing him to do this. And Ross was saying, you know, pointing out that, and also Cole pointed out that, you know, Hunter doesn't have referee experience. And, you know, logical, not over the top and center, you know, make me the center of attention type stuff, but just good logical commentary from Cole. Ross defending Hunter a bit and saying he, you know, pretty much only trusts himself to handle a match of that magnitude or something along those lines. It, you know, kind of get back to the usual stuff after that, unfortunately, with Cole just, you know, going into overdrive at different times. And I want Michael Cole just to sit back, be the heel color commentator, and let Jim Ross do play-by-play. I mean, it's not Cole's fault, but any thoughts on the announcing dynamic? Are they getting better, better than we saw last week from these three?
I think they're getting better. They've still got a long way to go, but I didn't find it quite as irritating tonight as I did last week. I mean, minor steps, not, you know, oh, God, they're so much better. Nothing like that, but... I think they're getting better. I think it'll settle in. Three-man booths take a long time to settle in. They're never really good. They're always going to be a little bit awkward. I mean, I don't like them anywhere. I don't like them in football. I don't like them anywhere. It's always going to be a little bit awkward. It's just the nature of a three-man booth. But I think they're settling in more. I think it'll be better in a couple of weeks. I've got Booker T on Friday night, and so I really am just to the point to where I don't listen to commentators anymore. I try to pick up on stuff that I think is important, but a lot of it is just filtered out because I have to listen about my boy Pete Brian and my Fate Five, and it's terrible.
Yeah, I really hope that Cole being part of the SmackDown team means that the three-man pay-per-view team is going to be Ross, Lawler, and Cole if there has to be a three-man team. I mean, in a perfect world, it would just be Ross and Lawler. I think Ross is going to shine on pay-per-view more than he gets to on Raw, because he is going to be able just to call those big matches more. I don't see Vince feeding, you know, in nonstop lines for Cole to jab at Ross during some of the bigger matchups. You know, we've seen Raw shine during Raw main events, so I have some faith that assuming he's actually on the damn team, which I think he will be. Hopefully this just means Booker's the odd man out, because I'm with you on him. He's atrocious. Apparently Bret Hart was Mr. SummerSlam. If Shawn Michaels was Mr. WrestleMania, Bret was Mr. SummerSlam, because I think two of the three SummerSlam flashbacks we've seen thus far involve Bret Hart. He lost the one to Davey Boy Smith at Wembley, and this time they were showing him beating Mr. Perfect, back when the Intercontinental title actually meant something. Scott Stanford was about to introduce Alberto Del Rio as the opponent for CM Punk, but Ricardo Rodriguez cut him off to make the announcement himself. Del Rio said Punk ran away from him when he tried to cash in Money in the Bank in Chicago, and he apparently called Punk a coward in Spanish. Let's stop there. Del Rio, he's losing matches. He lost again tonight. We'll get to that match. But are they making him... If they don't have big plans for him in the immediate future, I think this bodes poorly for him. But is there a decent chance that he leaves Sunday as the WWE champion because of the Money in the Bank factor?
I wouldn't be surprised in the least if that's what happens. And it's the only, if we're going to get a Hunter heel turn, it's the only one I'm willing to accept right now is that, you know, he calls the main event match clean, you know, goes right down the center, whoever is the undisputed champion, and then Del Rio comes out with Money in the Bank and cashes in, and Hunter interferes somehow there. Now, I don't want that to happen, don't get me wrong, but of all the different options, that's the one that offends me the least, if Hunter's going to make some sort of pronounced turn. I think it could be a lot of fun to have a heel Del Rio working as, if you're going to go with that corporate person, then I think that he's the best option that you have there. I don't think a heel Cena works there. Obviously, a CM Punk doesn't work there, period. But I think a Del Rio guy, character could. So I think there's at least, and I'd give it a 30% chance that he walks out of there that night as the new champion.
Yeah, I really wonder. They certainly played on the expected finish at Money in the Bank, and it didn't happen, and I'm happy it didn't. But now that we're a month later, I don't think there's as much. Well, I wonder if they just kind of toned it down on Del Rio intentionally, going, yeah, let's try to make people we're not going to take him off the show, but let's just, make him kind of look a little bit scrubby right now so that people are focused on Cena and Punk and aren't thinking as much about him. And we know that we can give him his heat right back as soon as he takes that title. So that, I think it's in play. It's something to keep an eye on. And I don't even, you don't have to turn Hunter as part of that scenario either. He can call it right down the middle, and Cena and Punk have this hard-fought match, and whoever wins, Del Rio, they're both exhausted. Del Rio comes out and cashes in and beats the winner of that hard-fought match. And, and Hunter doesn't, he just has to count the three, and he's got, what did I do? I just, the guy cashed in. There's nothing else I can do about it. So it's something to keep an eye on, I think, for Sunday. I think it is a realistic possibility again this month. We got the announcers talking about Truth and Morrison, and then backstage, Josh Matthews, who, thank God, ditched the Sally Jesse Raphael-like glasses that he was wearing last week. He asked Truth why he would attack his friend, because they went back and showed footage from that initial attack when he turned. I don't think they included the cigarette smoke. I just kind of like, wow, they're going that far back. I've seen all this, and I kind of zoned out and caught up on whatever I was doing. But Truth, he was in crazy mode. He was, why, spiders, why, and the crowd was giving him what chance. And then he said he talked about spider stew, and the only person that ate it was little Jimmy. One week he's a comedy character, the next week he's an edgy character, and I thought this one was, he was back to being a comedy character this week, at least for this segment.
Number one, he was wet, or he had baby oil or something, but he, and I'm not trying to be funny at all when I say this, my first thought when I saw him was, holy crap, Truth looks like a meth addict. It looks like his face is being just, he whatever that was that he had on his face, he doesn't need to have next week, because it just didn't make things look right. He was a weird visual for me. Maybe it was just me, but it looked strange.
I didn't really pick up too much. I mean, I've got a laptop in front of me, but now that you mention it, I'm thinking back, and yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I was just really just weird looking, but you're right. I think for at least the majority of this, I mean, he talked about making spider soup, for Christ's sakes. It was comedy or truth. I liked the idea of him calling him Spider-Man and playing into that form of crazy from before. I thought that was pretty good, calling Morris Spider-Man. But other than that, it was comedy stuff. I just don't understand what they're doing with it. I guess this is really real crazy insofar as you would never know what you would get from a real crazy person. But I don't think necessarily quite that much reality with my WWE crazy people. So yeah, definitely comedy here. And I just wanted to pick one or the other. Really, I'm okay if they want to do comedy, crazy R-Truth. I'm really okay with that because it's entertaining at times. But stick with it, stay with it there the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can do both, but you got to know that when he does all that comedy, it's not going to be he's going to lose some of that edge that they keep trying to give him. If you want to do comedy, then you can make him a little bit edgy. But if you want to make him edgy, you got to abandon a lot of the comedy. I mean, that's just the way it works. You know how many really edgy comedy characters are there that they're doing that style of comedy? I don't think it's going to happen. Michael Cole hyped CeeLo Green's performance for SummerSlam. Chris, he must be doing a full-on concert, like 30 songs or something, because we don't have an undercard for SummerSlam. We've got four matches advertised, and it's as we record this, at least your time, well, my time now, too, it's late. We're, like, only, what, 5 days away from this pay-per-view?
Yeah, it's like I tweeted you up. You said something about it on Twitter. I said, I guess CM Punk is going Broadway. It's the 60 minute draw or something. It's ridiculous that that's all we have right now. And there's no undercard, and so you keep expecting announcements to happen, and then you get matches later in the show with Truth and Morrison that you thought you were going to get on the pay-per-view. And I mean, the whole thing is just, you're sitting there scratching your head going, they can't be going to announce everything on SmackDown, can they? The ratings are, I mean, Raw is your ratings hog of everything that you put out. Why would you not put it there? I don't know why there's no undercard announced at this point. I guess now that that Triple H is in the main event, you don't need anything else. You got John Cena, you got CM Punk, you got Triple H. Hell, that's all we need to sell pay-per-views. It doesn't matter if we announce it or not. We can book it the day of the show.
I guess. I mean, I can't imagine. I just don't see anything on SmackDown that jumps out at me as, yeah, this is, you know, they're going to have a SmackDown-heavy undercard. Am I missing something?
No. I mean, I think we can expect an Intercontinental title match. I think we'll get Zeke versus Cody for the Intercontinental title.
Sure.
Maybe we get Barrett and Daniel Bryan. Maybe. I hope they're not going to jump the gun on that too fast. And then maybe something with Zack Ryder. I don't know. But that's, I mean, there's, but no, I mean, you're, even at that, I'm having to stretch. I mean, I can give you one for sure I think we're going to get, but everything from that is maybe. So, no, I don't know what. That gives us five matches. There's at least two more. There has to be at least two more somewhere, aren't there?
I mean, you would think at least two, yeah. I mean, I don't know how long they plan on going with I can't imagine CeeLo Green's going to take more than, you know, 3-4 minutes. And I guess they could take a long time with the main event. You know, I don't think they're going to go 60 minutes, but it really does seem odd to me that here it's SummerSlam and you've got four matches advertised, and one of those matches is a Divas match. And, you know, granted, I'm a little more intrigued by this Divas match than most Divas matches we've seen lately, but based on the crowd's reaction, which we'll get to when we get to that match, I don't know that the average fan out there is all that compelled by this. We got Rey Mysterio coming out. The announcer's hyping that he's going to get another shot at the WWE Championship next week in his hometown of San Diego. And he's going to face the winner, of course, of Cena versus Punk, or Del Rio, I guess. And then we got The Miz just coming out behind Mysterio and attacking him. Rammed him into that WWE logo thing that sits on the stage. Rammed his head in there several times. Miz was, I thought, pretty, you know, vicious. He was intense, and I liked it, both in his actions and on the mic, because Michael Cole got in the ring and asked him why he did it to Mysterio. And he complained about not having a SummerSlam match, and despite appearing on talk shows, trending on Twitter, because that's the most important thing in WWE, as we all know these days, is trending on Twitter. Just listen to Michael Cole bring it up 17 times a show. But he demanded that a referee come out and declare him the winner via forfeit. A referee did run out, but instead told Justin Roberts that Triple H had set up a new match, and didn't matter. Miz beat Kofi Kingston in 10:05. We got more Twitter talk. Swagger and R-Truth were trending on Twitter. Like, who gives a shit? Why do they keep telling us this, Chris? I mean, social media is important, but it isn't that damn important.
I mean, aren't you telling people to stop watching television and go play on their computers? I mean, isn't that what you're doing whenever you're telling, hey, go check out the fact that we're trending on Twitter? You know, it doesn't make sense. I understand why you maybe hype that stuff. You know, whenever you hype the Raw hashtag, because you want people talking about it. So that's
sure.
You hype the Raw hashtag, and you say, last week we had Jack Swagger and R-Truth trending worldwide for over an hour, or whatever the hell it was. And you know, you make a big deal about it then, you're still pushing people there to some degree, but it's like when you're going, right now they're trending, it's saying, right this second, leave and go check. It's really, I don't understand why you would do that. So, but yeah, as far as this match goes, I love the match, thought it was a good match. I just don't understand, I tweeted at this point, is Nitro on TBS right now, because they're giving away a lot of really fresh, pay-per-view matches that they could have CM Punk and Del Rio and Kofi and The Miz. It just really felt like they were hot-shotting it tonight.
Yeah, I don't understand why they're giving some of these matches away. That very good point. Have Kofi and The Miz done much of anything together?
I don't think so. I don't remember any real, because they were on different shows with the mid-cards at different times. And so I don't think they've ever had an opportunity to work together.
I mean, I'm trying to think.
I mean, any more than just a passing moment.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be. I don't remember any real feud between them because, I mean, while we all know Kofi's been working Dolph Ziggler for like, it feels like 10 years now. So, I don't know why they did that. I thought maybe they were setting up something for SummerSlam, but there was no announcement ever made. It was a good match. Miz ended up, you know, just. Dropping Kofi throat first on the top rope and then hitting the skull-crushing finale for the win. But Kingston got in plenty of offense. But, you know, I like seeing Miz go over clean. And I hope it's not, hey, we're setting this guy up for a face turn, so we need to start having him win clean matches. And I don't think that's what they're doing. And I mean, I just think that you make the heels look strong sometimes. And this was a good opportunity for them to do it. Miz looked vicious. You know, it's something that's really been missing from his character. You know, had he been doing more of this when he was WWE champion, I think it would have been a far more successful run. I mean, I think he won one more meaningful match on Raw without cheating tonight than he did throughout his WWE title reign. How sad is that? But, yeah, so this was good, and I didn't think Kofi lost all that much in losing to Miz. So I don't know if they're going to do more with these guys at the pay-per-view. I think we were thinking it was going to be Del Rio and Kofi, but they didn't have any interaction whatsoever, so I think, I mean, they could just throw it out there. But we went backstage at that point with Josh Matthews asking Punk about Hunter, naming himself the special referee, and he said it shouldn't surprise anyone because Hunter has a bigger ego than his father-in-law, and he said Hunter should know that the best thing for business is Hunter keeping his nose out of the match. But he said Hunter can't help himself, and he said he's solar-powered. And Punk briefly hyped his match with Del Rio, saying he was going to show the world what would have happened had they actually met at Money in the Bank. And he did just that after commercial break. It was Punk beating Del Rio with the legendary Ricardo Rodriguez, of course, in 4 minutes and 35 seconds. And this was pretty cut and dry. I mean, Punk just blasted him with a big kick down the stretch and hit him with the GTS and got the clean pin. I mean, it wasn't 100% Punk. It wasn't an all-out squash, but it was a very decisive win for CM Punk, which I think to the fans at home, the casual viewer at home, it probably does have that effect that Del Rio's really not even in the picture right now. Even though he's got that Money in the Bank contract, they're not thinking about it. Well, Punk just beat him. But I think to people like us, Chris, I don't know about you, but it made me think, I wonder what's going on with Del Rio. They're, you know, making him look weak now because on Sunday it's going to all be forgotten when he leaves as champion.
Yeah, I mean, the way they got there left me thinking that something was going to happen because they, you know, they went, at first they had him going after Punk. I'm like, you ran away from me when I tried to cash in, and then he just got beat down. It wasn't a squash like you said, but it was as close as you can get to one without the what I call the one run of offense squash. I mean, there was a little bit back and forth, but it was Punk just clean, and Punk playing to the crowd while he was going over clean as well a couple of times. You know, calling for the fans to cheer as he was about to do a move or after doing a move. And, you know, and it left me at the end going, God, did he, you know, had he done something wrong? Are they really doing that with him or is it for a purpose? And, so, I mean, I think that's where we are at this point is they're either doing it for a purpose or they've just really lost their way with Del Rio bad. So I hope it is because they're going to do something with him here very soon.
Fourth match, Beth Phoenix beats Eve Torres in 2:55. My quick thoughts are that I didn't like it. I think this is the match where you have Beth Phoenix just come out and destroy her opponent, and she gave up some offense to Eve. And, you know, Eve is the number two babyface by default almost on the Raw side of things. But I didn't need to see her at times kind of holding her own with Beth after the way Beth just destroyed Kelly last week. I thought they were building her up as the monster, and I think they still are. But, I mean, this is a match I think I saved, too. I mean, I don't know if there's any such thing as hot-shotting in the Divas division right now, but this is a matchup that I think, you know, once they get done with, I assume Beth gets the title sooner rather than later, and you would think that Eve would be one of her top challengers, but they just kind of plowed through that and made it very clear that, well, Beth's better than Eve.
Yeah, the whole booking thing was strange. The whole idea from start to finish, even with Kelly running down afterwards and attacking Beth for just a moment, just the whole thing didn't make any sense. There were so many better ways you could go. I thought Eve, the worst part about giving up offense to Eve this tonight, at least, was that Eve was pretty bad in the ring tonight. I mean, she missed quite a few spots, and her kicks were not crisp in any way, shape, or form. And I mean, I just thought that she really looked bad tonight, and it was. You know, and I don't know that Eve is the right person either because she's been set up as kind of the most physical of the Barbie dolls to kind of use that whole idea of we're not going to have Barbie dolls anymore mentality. I think there are better people they could have used for that, like to have Beth just plow through that person. So, the whole booking thing was strange from start to finish. I'm not a fan of what they did here tonight, but yeah, I still think they're going to move that title on Sunday. I mean, I don't think there's any way around it at this point.
Yeah, and then they had Kelly come out, and, you know, you'd think, hey, tune into the pay-per-view to see if she can get her revenge. Well, she just came out and took a shot at Beth from behind, and it's like, really? You just gave her revenge moment right there? I mean, I'm still interested in the match, only because I want that title off Kelly quickly. But were you at all surprised? I know I was, at the live crowd's lack of reaction. Not for Eve, because she never really gets a reaction, but for Beth after that big angle that they did last week with her, and they did show the highlight package that the live crowd gets to see, so that, you know, even if they forgot, it's like, oh yeah, she beat the holy hell out of her last week, and she comes out, and it's just, it's Beth Phoenix. Nobody seemed to care.
Well, and I'm not assigning anyone blame here. This is just the way life happens. If I'm a casual fan especially, they just promised me something with karma that then they jerked the rug out from under. And again, that's not WWE's fault. They didn't screw up. It's just one of them things. But they just kind of sent us down this storyline where they, you know, were building up at least one, and now in this case with Natty this past Friday on SmackDown, two women who were setting up to be monster heels in that division. Why buy into it at this point when we just got, you know, shafted with one recently? I understand that it was a pregnancy issue, but they've crapped on the Divas division for so long, and they gave us a little hope, and it got jerked away. I mean, fans are probably just cautious about, and cautious might be a bad word, but just, you know, well, let's wait and see if there's going to be anything sustained with this. I don't want to invest any energy into something that is going to be crap in 3 weeks.
After a commercial break, we got footage of Cena and Miz at the Teen Choice Awards. Because I mean, we don't need to spend much time on this, but I thought they at least did a decent job of explaining or showing that they didn't necessarily like each other, so you could kind of suspend your disbelief, even though they were sharing the stage at the award show.
Yeah, I thought it was cute for what it was. It was a Teen Choice Awards, and so it worked out okay in that sense. I really thought it was okay, and they did a did a pretty good job of, I mean, I thought they were funny and engaging and all those things. I thought it was a good thing for WWE. It was a good look for them.
Do we know why Cena was wearing the jogging outfit?
Well, they were giving an award to Glee, and that is what Sue Sylvester, Jane Lynch's character, wears on that all the time as a jogging suit.
Okay.
Miz even says, you didn't read the script, but you didn't know you were giving an award to Glee, but you're going to wing it with a Sue Sylvester jogging suit on. Really? Really? You know, you do the line, so.
Gotcha. I see. Then we go to fifth match, which was Alex Riley defeating Dolph Ziggler with Vicky Guerrero by DQ in a non-title match in 130. I thought this was a potential SummerSlam match as well, and I guess it still could be, but the focus really wasn't on the feud between the two wrestlers that just kind of started last week. Rather, it was about Dolph and Vicky apparently breaking up. The DQ occurred when Riley hit a spine buster, and then Vicky just runs in the ring and slaps him. They jawed for a little bit, and she slapped him, and right in front of the ref and was DQ'd. Ziggler didn't like this, and they bickered. Riley tried to pull Ziggler away. Dolph shoved him and tried to blow him off, and Riley punched him out, and then Vicky's tantrum continued. Dolph recovered, but he continued to complain to Vicky, and she ended up waving at him, and as she's leaving the ring, she's yelling that he's going to be nothing without her. And so trouble in paradise for Dolph and Vicky, and I don't know what we were supposed to think of Riley in this, but to me it was almost like he was kind of, it was like, you're a pest, get out of here, let's just, you know, you're not really part of this, we want to see the angle unfold. I don't know, they just haven't found their way with Alex Riley as far as I'm concerned.
The whole thing was stupid. I mean, you've got Vicky Guerrero out there and you give the mic to Alex Riley, are you kidding me?
Then,
you know, and then he goes and makes the weakest joke ever about her breath stinking,
uh-huh.
And that's what's got her all worked up. I mean, and someone said on Twitter, wow, she's really pissed off about a stinky breath joke. It's, you know, as many times she was called a fat slob to get pissed off over your breath stinks, just was really bizarre. The whole thing just fell apart. I guess they had to get them away from each other. They couldn't find a classy way to get out, so they went with this. So, I mean, at least it's over at this point.
It just felt really, really rushed. Like, I mean, they haven't really been having issues lately that I recall, and all of a sudden this week, bam, it's just, there must be some storyline reason that they had to do it now, you would think, because otherwise, don't you just wait until after SummerSlam to do this and give it a little more focus and don't just do it in a, you know, 90-second match that nobody cares about? And it's strange. I don't know what the purpose of that was, but maybe we'll find out there is a reason for it. As I put out there, I hope Dolph ends up with Shaw Guerrero, who's Vicky's daughter, who's working in developmental. I only half-ass hope that. I'd love to think Dolph could break out and be his own guy and stand on his own, but I don't know. It's like every time they try to do something with him, he only gets so far. Some of it's creative, but I don't know. I mean, I like Dolph's work, but Chris, does this guy have legit main event potential? Like, if they wanted to thrust him into the main event spot, you know, not necessarily give him the title or anything, but put him in that upper mix, would he stick?
He's got great work, and I think he's got a lot of charisma, but he's just missing something on the microphone. I mean, when he talks, he's just not convincing. He feels like a character. He doesn't feel like a real person.
Yeah.
And until he solves that problem, I don't think he sticks.
Yes, I don't know what they're doing with those two, where they're heading with it, and I can't say they did it in a way that really compelled me enough to care and think about, wow, what's next for these two? It just was poorly done, and I don't think Riley gained anything from this. He always comes across smug to me, and I don't think it's by design. They always have him, he was the doofus that was with Miz before, but now he's always the guy smiling and like he's one step ahead of his heel opponents, and to me, it's like the smile just comes off like he thinks he's smarter than everybody. And granted, he usually is smarter than the heels that he's been working with lately. But I want the Riley thing to work, but I don't think it's there just yet. The announcer spoke about the SummerSlam pay-per-view, and I'm like, oh, here it comes. They're going to announce some undercard matches. No. Jim Ross set up a video package that recapped the whole CM Punk and John Cena saga. And then the announcers ran through the previously announced SummerSlam matches. I'm like, oh, here it comes. No. No new matches advertised. The same four they've been advertising now for a while. And we got R-Truth making his entrance, and we went to commercial. And when they came back, it was Truth beating John Morrison in 4 minutes. Am I reading too much into this when I think that, let's see, Melina just got let go on Friday, and we know Morrison and Melina are a legitimate couple outside of the world of WWE, and this could have been on the pay-per-view. I thought for sure this was going to be on the pay-per-view, and
yeah.
It didn't make the pay-per-view, and Truth won decisively. It was another case of a heel winning clean, which I like, and it gave him some of that edge back that we were talking about from earlier. But, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't just an all-out squash or anything, but I when this was over, I'm like, what's up with Morrison? Is he in the doghouse? What's going on here?
Twitter exploded as soon as the match went off. Expect John Morrison to be cut by Friday night. That was what the world, that's what was trending worldwide at that point, trust me. At least amongst the people that I follow. It really is. You have to wonder. He came out in support of her after she was released on Twitter. He released a statement. It wasn't derogatory in any way. He did talk about Vince, and Vince saying something about, standing out or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it didn't really come across as nasty or complaining or whatever. And, I think that unless somebody just wanted to get their hackles up, there wasn't enough there to really make it a big deal. Now, what he's doing behind the scenes, only those guys know. He could be in trouble from this. He's already been stupid once for her with Trish Stratus at WrestleMania. There's no reason to believe he wouldn't be stupid for her again. But he's in a spot right now that there are a million, I could probably find in 30 seconds, 10,000 independent wrestlers who would trade spots with him in a second right now. He's almost there. He is as high up as the card as you can get without being in the main event. He's about to break through, and to think that he would risk all that for, a woman who, the reputation surrounding their relationship is pretty, pretty rough, if you've heard it. And if there's any truth to that, to think that you would put that spot in jeopardy for her is just beyond explanation.
Yeah, I don't want to read too much into it because they did give in. I mean, there was a storyline reason. Truth picked him up and clipped his legs, and Morrison fell back, and it was like, damn, that was a nasty spill.
Yeah.
They made the mistake of showing the slow motion replay, and the idea was supposed to be that, man, he hurt his neck again, which was, we all know, surgically repaired. And when they showed the replay, it was like, oh, he landed on his shoulder blades. Thanks for showing us and wrecking it, WWE. Sometimes it's times like that where their own, their production capabilities work against them. So they gave him that out. I mean, that was like the storyline was that he couldn't recover from that, the blow to the neck, and Truth ended up pinning him clean after hitting his finisher inside the ring. So, again, I mean, it makes Truth look good. It makes Morrison... He doesn't lose a tremendous amount here. I don't know that he's on the verge of being a main eventer. I mean, for years people have been saying that about him, and there's just, man, he's just never connected as a character. He has the tools physically, he has the look, but when he opens his mouth, it's kind of like golf. There's just something that doesn't register, doesn't click, and
yeah.
I don't think he's really found his groove there. I know he brought her to the house shows over the weekend. She had something on Twitter about that. So I don't know if they didn't like that it really brought her after we just got rid of her. What are you thinking? So I don't want to read too much into this, but I just thought it was very interesting that, he lost decisively, despite the excuse with the neck and all, but he lost decisively on this show. If this happens at SummerSlam, yeah, people are still going to jump to that conclusion, but you'd think it would be a longer match, and it would just, I don't know. I'm not sure how to read this yet. I guess I don't expect them to have the rematch at SummerSlam now that Truth just won, so I don't know where they're going with this. And if they're both going to be around, and there's no reason to think Truth's going anywhere, but if Morrison's still going to be around a while, here's another case of a match they just gave away on free TV and you're left shaking your head. We got the shot of John Laurinaitis going over the details of the SummerSlam contract with Triple H. Chris, don't you think maybe you do that in advance, not, you know, a minute before you're going to the ring? It's like they're creative team members.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange. I guess it's a last-minute thing to, or going to make sure that all the details were there, but it was kind of strange.
We got Cole announcing again that Mysterio would get his title shot against the winner of Punk versus Cena. That'll be on next week's Raw in his hometown of San Diego. So they did like this injury angle with him, and they were doing injury angles with him on Saturday and Sunday too. And the reason for anyone who missed it, he suffered a knee injury on Friday night, and so he continued to work the house show. So you got to think, well, that's probably a good sign if he's still traveling that, you know, whatever he did, it's not all that serious. But then they did another injury angle with him tonight, but they really didn't express any doubt that this match would take place. And so for me, did I miss something there? I mean, were they at all skeptical? Like, well, if he's good to go, at least.
Yeah, no, I mean, they just said it would happen, and I don't even remember, anybody saying anything in passing, like, you know, assuming he's okay after the beating he got tonight. So, no, I mean, they didn't leave any doubt. It's certainly one of the reasons why I also lean towards Del Rio was because, you know, that was a good feud for WWE. I don't think they should necessarily go back to it, but as kind of the start to his title run, that would be a good guy to work with for a second.
Yeah, good point. Definitely. And I mean, they could turn around and do another injury angle next week if he's not ready. I mean, I guess, but I don't even know why they felt the need to do the injury angle tonight. It made Miz look really good at the time, and then by the end, you're like, well, I guess Mysterio's not all that beat up after all. We got another WWE poll. It was the same result as last week when they asked us who the real WWE champion was. And 54% of the people proved that they're idiots by voting for Cena last week. And that's not an anti-Cena thing. It's just the way, it's like Punk won the championship by beating Cena 8 days before Cena won it by beating a man that had already wrestled earlier in the night. And to me, it was just like a popularity poll, of course. And I'm sure this was too. And they got the identical result. This question was, who's going to leave the SummerSlam as champion? Unlike we're going to do, they didn't include Del Rio as an option. So, yeah, 54-46. I have no idea if they're working their poll numbers or not. I don't even know why they'd need to, but that was the tally, and they even acknowledged that it was the same as last week. And then it was the announcers acted like they were interviewing Christian. This looked to me like it was something that was pre-taped, and he just fed off of whatever one of them said, and then it was all Christian. And it wasn't like he was answering questions after that. Basically, Chris, I think he just said he had something to say that Triple H would want to hear on Friday SmackDown. Was that the gist of it?
Yeah, Triple H wanted to show up Friday night because live on SmackDown is what he said, which I thought was kind of funny. He needed to show up live on SmackDown Friday because you're not going to want to miss my announcement.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, this is a variation of what I've been saying they should do for a while. I mean, it's UFC-like, where if you ever watch their live Fight Night specials, they're usually like held the Saturday before whatever the next big pay-per-view is. And they don't always have the fighters that are going to be headlining those pay-per-views in the building. So they do live via satellite. Well, sometimes it's live, sometimes it's not, but a satellite interview with those guys that are headlining the show. And I've been saying for a while, do something like that. You don't have to just completely rip it off, but if you do, who cares? But, you know, start doing more. It's all it takes is dedicate 30 seconds to even up to 2 minutes. If you've got a SmackDown main event, do something like that. And so I think this was a little too quick to be effective for my taste, especially when Hunter is in the ring after this and doesn't even acknowledge it. So that was kind of disappointing. But at least, I think it's more effective than their commercials that they air. Because when I see, you know, a WWE video package or commercial, maybe I'm different than a lot of people, Chris, but, hey, it's bathroom time. It's time to go to the fridge. It's time, you know, whatever the case may be. And so I don't always pay as much attention to those SmackDown commercials where generally they really don't tell you anything anyway. Sometimes they'll give you a main event, but a lot of times it's what we saw last week where they kind of make you think you're going to see a match like Mark Henry and Sheamus and then they don't deliver, or it's just really generic like, hey, just in case you didn't know, Randy Orton's still on SmackDown. So, you know, it was a step in the right direction, but I didn't feel like it was very effective. Did you?
No, I mean, they put something on there, and I appreciate that, and they made it about Orton to let people know that the biggest star over there is him, and I appreciate the effort of something, but it was a little more than, like you said, in the past when we've just gotten generics of generics, but it didn't, the Christian thing did more than this did, and it didn't do a whole lot, but it's at least something. The commercial itself wasn't worthwhile at all.
Triple H was in the ring along with John Laurinaitis, and they had a table set up for the contract signing, and Punk was out first, Cena came out, the crowd, they were a little more lively than they were for the Divas, but it wasn't like either guy got a great reaction, did they?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was just kind of,
they'd seen him before.
Yeah, exactly, so we saw it at the top of the show, so, okay, welcome out.
I still thought it would be better than what they gave them, even though they'd seen the entrance before. But, I mean, this was the crowd was kind of drained, I think, by this point. But some good jabs in here. I like Punk mocking Hunter, saying he had a big-time movie star ready to explain how he feels about Cena. And he said it wouldn't be a clip from The Chaperone. And Hunter asked him, tries to cock off back to him, how was your movie? And Punk fired back that it was straight to DVD, just like yours, which I thought was great. And then we got footage of Rock's Hilltop video promo that was on, I would say about a month ago that he cut this promo on Cena, and it was online only?
It was at least 3 weeks, if not a month, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it looked, it was what it was. When you saw it online, it looked fine. When I saw it on the big screen on Raw, it looked like bad video footage. And they cut it all up and everything. And it was fine. You get The Rock on the show in a weird way. But for some reason, I think they're trying to work Rock into this somehow. Did you get anything out of why Rock, why they needed to add that Rock clip to this?
No, somebody said on Twitter about the video quality, with all the money Rock makes, you think he could afford the 60 frame per second flip camera?
Yeah, no kidding. But, when I saw it on Twitter, I never thought anything of it, or Facebook, or wherever the hell he was airing that thing. But then you put it on here, and it did look really low budget. So I'm not sure why they felt the need to include that, but they did. And Cena, I guess because they wanted to work in how Punk and Rock both take shots at poor John Cena, and he tried to defend himself to some extent, and talking about how Rock's on the set of his new movie, G.I. Joe, and congratulated him, and that he doesn't know why Rock has so many problems with the clothes he wears, and Punk cut him off and said he didn't show that clip so Cena would go off on The Rock, which was like, thank you, you have a match this Sunday that you kind of need to promote, not Mania now. Cena said he might be too PG for Punk. He said he might be a modern-day Hulk Hogan, who took the hand away from his ear and put it in front of his face. He did the "you can't see me" hand gesture. The fans booed the Hulk Hogan reference. This man is not popular in the WWE universe these days. I mean, I just think back to that. I think it was the WrestleMania press conference they did in New York City, and someone mentioned Hogan, and the fans there just booed. There's no way around it now. I mean, this is two crowds now. WrestleMania in New York City crowd, maybe, but here they are out in California, and so, I don't think they've got a reputation as being a jaded group of fans like New York or sometimes the Chicago fans, and they did not like this Hogan reference, and so I wonder how this is going to be spun within TNA. Any thoughts on that, Chris?
Oh, God only knows, but yeah, the WrestleMania one was the best one because it just a Hogan sucks chant started organically, and I remember Stephanie McMahon clearly going, well, he won't be there on WrestleMania. Who knows? I mean, God, Hulk Hogan is so detached from reality anymore that there is no way I could possibly guess what the reaction from him is going to be.
I think I can. Well, I'm a heel, brother. It shows immortals over.
Oh, God.
I'm just telling you how he would try to, I don't know if he'd even believe it, but as long as Dixie Carter believes it, I think that's the only thing that matters. And if you're Hogan and your contract with TNA is supposedly coming up here sometime around the end of the year, if not the end of the year, it's you're not really going to have a whole lot of leverage, you wouldn't think, but it is Dixie Carter and TNA, and even if, you know, people who have zero leverage and it's well established they have no leverage seem to get decent paydays from TNA anyway, so who knows. But Cena was talking about how he'll never win over the millions, referring to Rock's fans, and he's never going to win over Punk's fans. He brought up the reference Punk made to the New York Yankees, and he said he was initially offended, but he realized that the Yankees are the most loved and hated team in sports. And he said he's not concerned with the fans who liked him. He's only concerned with his fans, essentially. And Cena recalled Punk wanting a jet and having his own ice cream bars, and he said Punk is trying to come back as the voice of the voiceless, but he's really the phony. And Hunter chimed in and said Cena had a point, and because he eventually came back for more money. And at this point, I think people were going, ooh, wow, see, they're trying to bury Punk. Did you take it that way?
No, I mean, I just thought it was the natural conversation that you would go to. I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's the truth. I mean, it doesn't make any sense for CM Punk to come out and start talking about how many times have you laid in bed and said, you know, I just don't think he has it while you're laying in bed with your wife and doing the stuff that he did with Cena, but the other guys are not supposed to return in kind and talk real like supposedly CM Punk is. I mean, that's preposterous, and it was the perfect thing to go to, and I thought Punk handled it perfectly with what he said, and it was just the perfect fuel for the fire. Anybody who said he was getting buried there just failed to understand storytelling.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think everyone is so, oh my God, it's Hunter and he's out to get CM Punk. And it's like it's a story. You know, maybe we'll find out down the road that he doesn't like Punk and he is going to be out to get him at some point. But what you're seeing right now is a storyline. And until there's proof that WWE isn't behind this Punk character, then I'm just not listening to it. I'm sorry. We did get Punk referring to Laurinaitis as Funk Man, which has got to be a reference to same thing I pointed out last week, and I'm sure I'm not the only person, that John Laurinaitis is essentially, he's Super Dave Osborne, a.k.a. the great Marty Funkhauser from Curb Your Enthusiasm. If you're not watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, you should be. It's a phenomenal show. Same guy. And he also reminds me of Dauber from Coach. I think based on that video they put up over the weekend, Laurinaitis was talking about, you know, how the dynamic dudes change wrestling and all this. I think they realize that he can't be a serious character, and they're kind of making him more of a little bit stooge-like, like Briscoe and Patterson were, kind of buying into his own bullshit and recreating history and stuff. If they go that route with it, I'm okay with it then. But I don't think he's a great character. They really need to pick their spots. Where I don't think he's a great performer, so they need to pick their spots with him. But then Punk brought up the Vladimir Kozlov and Harry Smith firings and was questioning whether Laurinaitis flew to Tampa to explain it or, you know, what excuse was given. And then he took a jab at Cena. He recalled winning the ECW title for the first time, and Cena approached him backstage and congratulated him on a good match and then said that he almost gave up on Punk. And Punk said he's had a sour taste in his mouth for Cena ever since. He said Cena moved to California to become a bodybuilder and then became a pro wrestler, whereas he wanted to be a pro wrestler from the start. And he admitted that, he wanted his face on an ice cream bar. You're damn right. He wanted the perks. I thought that was good. You know, nice way to come back at that. Talked about Cena entering Los Angeles 7 years ago, winning his first championship. And he said this week, or this time around, he's walking out with nothing. He said Cena will be able to make the Marine Corps and have his WrestleMania match with The Rock. And his legions of fans will still pee in their pajamas whenever they think about him. But he won't be WWE champion. And he signed the contract at this point. There was a very loud CM Punk chant. And Cena mockingly clapped for him. And normally it irritates me when Cena no-sells what people are saying, but I think he's done a really good job in this. I mean, you're not just going to sit there and take all of this. You're going to fire back. And I thought his comeback was great. He said, fine speech. He asked if Punk realizes how much pressure is on him. Cena's kind of getting into his head a little bit, I think, or, you know, that was the idea. He said Punk beat him in one match straight up and deserves to be WWE champion. And he asked if Punk has thought about what might happen if he loses at SummerSlam. He commended him for speaking his mind and delivering pipe bombs, but he said he has to back it up or he's a loudmouth one-hit wonder and compared him to some of the famous one-hit wonders. And then Cena signed the contract and wished Punk luck. Punk said, luck is for losers, and I'd rather be a one-hit wonder than a phony. And Cena said he'd had enough of the talking thing, and they both, you know, the table got tipped over and all that stuff, and they're about to get face-to-face, and Laurinaitis steps between them, and this time it wasn't Cena who got to punch him out. This time it was Punk who got to kick Laurinaitis in the head. I'm sure, much like Cena was a hero for punching Laurinaitis and giving him a black eye, I'm sure that they're, you know, Punk managed to, oops, sorry, John, I hit you a little harder than I meant to. There was a lot of cheering going on backstage, I'm sure. But Hunter pushed back, pushed Punk back toward the ropes. Cena reached around Hunter. When I watched it live, I thought, I'm like, did he hit Hunter and that's the story they're going to go with? No, he got around Hunter and threw the punch at Punk. But Hunter went down briefly with Punk. And then Hunter and Cena ended up exchanging some brief words about that. But then they both looked down at Punk, who then, without the mic in hand, was starting to question whether the fix is in and whether it's a nice little company party. And that's how the show ended. What did you think of the way Hunter went down? Was that by design? Or is that something they can play off of? Or was it just he happened to tumble down with him?
Well, just quickly, if Cena and Punk are not, if they do not have legitimate heat, if they're okay with each other, then I'm pretty sure what happened backstage afterwards was Cena poked his head in the door and went, felt good, didn't it? And Punk went, yeah, it did. they got a moment they could share, him from the pay-per-view and Punk from tonight. I didn't like the very, very end. I thought that everything leading up to Punk rolling out of the ring and how it just kind of hung there, I thought that went on too long. I think Hunter going down was either a mistake on Hunter's part or he reacted. Maybe Cena didn't quite get around him, and so Hunter was like, well, shit, I got a sale. I mean, just instinct kicked in. He got clubbed in the back, and so he went down like he was supposed to, and then was like, oh, wait, I'm not supposed to go down here or whatever. I mean, I don't know. It was certainly strange for him to go down and not to be more upset about it than he was. I thought it recovered from it okay, but it was an awkward spot. And then, you know, all the stuff with CM Punk yelling from the floor, I just thought was wasted. That should have been something that should have been on the mic to make sure people heard it. I just don't know. There was a lot of that tonight. We had it at the beginning with Cena and Hunter, and then at the end of the show with Punk and Hunter, or mostly, I guess, just Punk there yelling stuff that nobody could understand or hear. I don't know why you do that. I don't see what the point of it is. And then it was almost like, you know, like, as I was sitting there going, God, this is how they're going to end, because the little logo came up on the screen, and I was unhappy. And then we get Jerry Lawler as the last voice we hear go, well, somebody's going to be the champion. It was just, you know, it was really upsetting because it was such a good segment, and just one where I had my mouth open and was just completely, you know, transfixed with what was happening and just enjoying it as a fan. And it just kind of left me flat at the very end. I'm not that it killed the segment in any way, shape, or form, but it was just kind of a letdown. I thought they had built to something better than what we got at the very, very end.
Yeah, you know, you have Jim Ross there. And, I mean, I totally agree. You got to make sure you pick up what Punk is saying. I was able to make it out. I don't know that everybody at home cared enough to rewind it like I did to make sure I knew exactly what he was saying.
Right.
But I go, I make sure you get that, and I go about another 30 seconds longer with those guys staring at one another and jawing back and forth from the ring. Well, Jim Ross sells me on that match. I mean, there's nobody better at doing that. He knows how to sell. He knows that he just knows how to sell a pay-per-view. He knows how to sell an important match. That's what he thrives at. And so, yeah, I mean, Lawler's, someone's got to be champion line. It's not nearly as effective as what Jim Ross could have done. So they're still not taking full advantage of JR being back. But, you know, I think as a go-home show, Chris, this, you have to consider, even though we only have four frickin' matches advertised, I mean, it's, you're buying this show for Punk and Cena. You know, you're either into it or you're not. I don't think there's that much interest right now in Christian versus Randy Orton. I don't think anyone's buying this show for the Divas. There might be some really horny guys out there, like that Lee Silver guy or whatever the hell his name was, that Maurice Stalker. And, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone's buying it for Mark Henry versus Sheamus. So, you know, it's all about Punk and Cena. And for that reason, I think as a go-home show, this was very successful.
I absolutely agree. I mean, and we've had good Raws for the past week, and this was a good Raw. I mean, it was good from start to finish. It wasn't perfect from start to finish. Like, you know, there were certainly some moments where we rolled our eyes or we said, okay, that was just poorly done. But as the show taken as a whole, I thought was a pretty good show. They did a good job of, as I said to open the show, our show with, is that they did a good job of selling that pay-per-view because you're buying it for Cena or Punk, just like you said. And they gave us something a little bit different from what we got the month before. It's still the same basic storyline. We still understand where we are. But it was something different, and it made me want to tune in and buy the pay-per-view this week.
Real long shot here. Any chance, I'm guessing it was legitimate. I mean, we know Rock is filming G.I. Joe, but, you know, they went out of their way to say that he's filming the movie, but they also showed us the clip. Is there, like, some outside chance that Rock makes an appearance on Sunday?
I don't think so, only because they've made a point of saying he's coming back at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
And I just don't think they jumped the gun on that. A 1% chance because it's wrestling, and by God, anything is possible in wrestling. But outside of that 1%, just because, no.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they did it. They did it if they did it for that reason. They did it the right way in trying to make while he's on, without just coming out and beating you over the head with it. Going, well, he's on set. There's no way he's going to be here. But I don't think so either. I guess, it is wrestling. You can't rule out anything. But you would think that somehow, some way, WWE would let you know so that they could get more, a better buy rate out of this thing if they did indeed have him coming to the show. But any other thoughts on this show overall? I think we've covered a good chunk of it. I mean, we know that Mysterio, I guess we can talk a little bit about SmackDown 2 and just what's ahead for that go-home show. We know Christian is going to say something that Triple H wants to hear, so Triple H is going to be there. He is advertised. And we're going to get the shocking return of Sin Cara, only because Sin Cara, the guy who plays that character, or had been playing that character, is still suspended. And he's not eligible to return until, I think it's next week at this time, at next week's SmackDown tapings is when I think the month is up, somewhere around there. So lots of rumors that they're going to have Unico, who is an FCW wrestler who actually worked as Mystico at one time, which is what the guy who plays Sin Cara was known as in Mexico. He worked as Mystico in FCW, not in Mexico. There's a height difference between the guys, and I think it's going to be obvious to a lot of people if they go that route. Any thoughts on that situation? Does this mean the guy who actually plays Sin Cara is going away, and they're going to just try to put this guy into that character now, or just any speculation on how that might play out?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why. If he's able to come back next week, I mean, if I remember right, the July 19th was the suspension. And if they call it a television suspension, I guess, then maybe he can take the 16th is the Tuesday taping. So, but the 18th then would be that Thursday, and the 19th would be that Friday. So he could appear on Friday. Maybe they say, well, he can work on Tuesday because it won't actually appear on Friday. I don't know. But if he's eligible, why would you bring a guy back temporarily for a week or 2 weeks at most? I don't think it bodes well for the original Sin Cara that they're going to replace him even for a short term because, like you said, it's going to be obvious, so why do it for just a week or two?
A couple of things I can think of. I mean, I don't think it bodes well for him either, especially when, I don't think they're going to rush to have Sin Cara on SummerSlam. I don't know why you would. So, there's got to be a reason they're bringing him back. Two things I can think of is, one, it was pitched for a long time, and it kind of fell on deaf ears. Vince never went for it, but Rey Mysterio always wanted to have, like, that dark Rey Mysterio character. Loki was the guy that he really wanted to play that role, and it never happened, where it would be, Rey would have to fight a guy who was dressed like him, kind of an evil Rey character. Maybe they do something like that with Sin Cara. It seems like a long shot because they barely even established Sin Cara at this point. The other thing is, you know, from a storyline standpoint, putting aside the wellness policy factor, they had, I mean, the storyline is that he was injured by Sheamus. And I just, you know, I mean, I don't know why you would have to reintroduce him on the SmackDown going into SummerSlam. I think it would be even more of a surprise if that was, you know, if they need an out for Sheamus and Henry. They don't want either one of them to lose clean. And they want Sin Cara to get revenge on Sheamus for God knows what reason. It wouldn't make any sense because they both seem like they're baby faces right now. You know, you'd have Sin Cara come out at SummerSlam when no one's expecting him, another guy dressed like him, and do that quickly. So I don't know what their motivation is with this one. It's really strange. I guess we'll, you know, get a better idea of where they're going with this after the SmackDown tapings on Tuesday. We are still looking for correspondents for that show. So if you happen to be listening to this and you're going to SmackDown tonight and you want to help us out, you can reach out to me. My email address is all over prowrestling.net, but real quick, it's .net Jason, D-O-T-N-E-T Jason at gmail.com. And hopefully we'll get a report from that taping because, you know, it is a go-home show for SummerSlam, and I would think maybe they'll announce another match for this four-match card. We won't be subjected to an hour and a half of CeeLo Green's greatest hits. I don't think he can do the FU song. He'd have to do that radio version of it.
Yeah, definitely have to do the radio version.
Yeah, I don't even know of any other CeeLo Green songs other than the SummerSlam theme, so I have no idea what the hell they're going to do. But I would think they got about three more matches they need to add to this card at least. And
well, I mean, if we get the Intercontinental Championship match, which I would about bet the house on, that would leave us with at least two more after that.
And that match, I mean, it's Zeke. I can't imagine that match going any more than like 5 minutes if they don't want it to just become a train wreck, right?
Maybe Cody can get a good match out of them. I mean, I wouldn't give it more than eight.
I don't even know if I'd give it more than three, but that's probably going to be. I don't know, but I guess we'll find out what the hell they plan on adding to this show. Maybe. Maybe they're going to finally give Johnny Curtis and R-Truth their long-awaited tag title shots for winning NXT season, whatever. I wish that show would just end. Anyway, I think now that I've actually worked NXT into the conversation, that's when you know it's time to wrap this up.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. Chris will be by with your WWE NXT coverage, live coverage, I believe, because I think it is a live show since they're on the West Coast, on Tuesday night. Maybe, just maybe, they'll actually give us some indication of when this never-ending, horrible season is going to end. I'm not holding my breath either. But, check out, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, make sure you check the site because my WWE Raw hit list will be up. Ryan Kester's rundown of the show will be up. The Pruitt Pause on Raw will be up. So three different perspectives on the WWE Raw television show. Chris's live coverage of NXT and obviously all the news of the day. So it's always busy over at ProWrestling.net, especially early in the week with the Monday and Tuesday craziness. And so we've got a lot going on. Hopefully you'll check it out. And again, be sure to check out whether you're a member or you just check out the ad-based version of the site, both Chris and I will be doing live coverage of WWE SummerSlam on Sunday night. And then the members will hear us team up again for .NET member exclusive audio review of that show. So, thank you very much. It was always good to talk to you, Chris, and everybody else. We will talk to you soon. Take care.